Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Blow the horn. Let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champ.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's a selfless big place of fun.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Don't let you make us play against. And make us ask quit. That's our framework. That's our M.O. with the team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks. A mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, what was all the hype about?
Man, our score prediction, you know, we got the margin of victory correct. We just, although I like the outcome better, obviously, they said this was the sixth shutout for LSU since 1996, and that's the fifth time it's been Alabama doing it. So while I liked our score of 40-something to the teens, I like this score better because they had a big donut.
Yeah, I liked the donut. I also like, and you know, we play them in Baton Rouge every other year, and it just so happens that, you know, last time, 2 years ago, we beat them, you know, 10-0. And so what that would have been 2016. And so 2018, we beat them 29-0. And so projecting out into the future in 2020, as we prepare for that game, I can see into the future. The headlines will be Alabama or LSU has not scored on Alabama in Death Valley in 6 years. And that'll be awesome. And so the future me is already excited about reading those headlines.
The only problem with that theory is 2 years from now, Tua will be a senior, and I don't know that we'll see him in red. And his little brother might end up, you know, following through on his commitment, you know, when it comes time to signing day. But there's a little bit of a question mark there, right? Because, is Tua going to be like Peyton Manning and stay around because he wants to, or is he going to go because he can? So we'll have to. That could be another show, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, let me just go ahead and clean that up for you. In 2 years, Tua will be a rookie.
Well, I will tell you real quick that, you know, we talked on the show last time about how, you know, when Devin White came into the game, you know, it wouldn't be a game when he got to come in the second half. And, you know, I will tell you for LSU fans, you know, keep an eye on Patrick Queen because – his backup, played quite well. Obviously, this is an Alabama podcast, but his backup finished with, you know, 9 tackles for the game. And I don't think LSU fans can use that as a reason, I guess is what I'm saying. But Patrick Queen finished with 9 tackles in the first half, and Devin White comes in and gets him 8 tackles in his half of, you know, football in the second half. But, you know, it wasn't quite – the game wasn't out of reach. We would have liked it to be a little bit different of a margin, you know, a little more points there at halftime. But I don't think that Devin White, you know, changed this game either way is what I'm saying.
No, I don't think so either. And when we flip the field and go to defense, I've got almost like a little mini rant, you know, keyed up to talk about what I think the biggest factor in, and I'll call it LSU losing the game or sort of giving it away. And it was not Devin White. I mean, like you said, he got 8 tackles in the second half. And so clearly a very talented player. Right. But much like we predicted, and we didn't do a pregame show necessarily, I kind of wish we had, but we talked about this game in the Tennessee wrap-up, and go back and listen to that if you missed it, right? Because everything we said there, I think, sort of manifests itself. You know, by the time Devin White comes back, the game will be over. It will not have mattered that he missed the first half. And you can look on the scoreboard and see, well, it was 16-0, so maybe he can come back and contribute. But dude's not scoring touchdowns, and their offense was as inept as it gets. And so bringing back a middle linebacker doesn't help you. It doesn't put points on the board. And at that point in the game, their defense had been on the field for so long that, I mean, he was coming in fresh, but the rest of the unit was gassed. Of course, they had an injury in the secondary, and that hurt them a little bit more. And so would they have done a couple of things differently early in the game had he been there? Yes. At the end of the day, would that have made a difference? Absolutely not. And look, he's a talent. He's going to be a first-round pick. He's going to be all the things you want to say, but he alone would not have swayed the balance had he played, 30 more minutes of ball.
No, absolutely. And I guess that's what I was pointing out with Patrick Queen's performance, right? Because he had 9 tackles in the first half, and Devin White has 8 in the second half. So that position got 17 freaking tackles in the game, which is ridiculous, right? That's a great number.
There wasn't a void. You said it more cleanly, I guess. There wasn't a void, right? We didn't exploit a weakness in the middle because there really wasn't.
No, absolutely. Now, I will say, looking at their depth chart, that obviously John Battle's injury on the first offensive play for Bama for the game, did that probably make a difference some? Yes, because he was their only fifth-year senior on the defense, okay? And he is, that would be like us losing Minka Fitzpatrick on the first, offensive play of a game last year. So, obviously, I do think that he made a material difference not being there. Do I think it would have changed the outcome of the game? No, because like you said, LSU couldn't score really. I will say that the strong safety, the sophomore, Grant Delpit, going back and looking at that play where he got a shot on Tua, the sideline judge is throwing his flag and running into the play. And I was not impressed with the referee at all. He just kind of slowly lumbers his way in, and you and I have seen situations where they sprint in and hold their hands up and they don't let anybody get a clean shot on a free shot on the quarterback. And not only did he get a free shot, but he said, it's kind of funny with the whole targeting, right? It's all about the helmet. Well, he leaps, off his feet, leads with his helmet, doesn't use his hands at all. It makes you wonder if he was going for the knee, but he ends up getting him, right there in his waist area, which is, not good either. And I'm just surprised that, I guess the rules of the game doesn't allow for a penalty there. But I was hoping he was going to get tossed, a little bit later when they had the other call, just because I wasn't impressed with that. I'm not saying they were gunning for him, but I'm not impressed with how low he went there, and they're all about not going low on the quarterback. And I was surprised that there was no warning or nothing. They didn't talk to him. Nothing happened.
Yeah. Nothing that was visible. And I think that, even the TV crew sort of blew it off on, hometown, crowd, and they're so loud and all of that. And you're right. I think it is sort of lazy officiating because, how often it was almost like whistle, play stop and the official sort of saunters in. But how many times do you see, you know, the official waving in? There's almost a franticness to it. The official's running in, waving his arms, whistle, 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 whistle. And so like everyone knows, but you didn't see that. You didn't see that at all. You know, and of course my heart did sink when he was slow getting up. And to quote Tua, he said he was hitting the goodies, which, okay. And then Saban, and, you know, sort of man to man, you never want to see someone, you know, experience that. But I thought Saban was stone cold when he said, well, when I heard that's where he was hit, I was kind of glad that's where he was hit. And I thought, man, that is savage. And I can't find myself disagreeing.
No, that's true. I just, you know, I guess the rules of the game doesn't allow for a penalty flag there. But, you know, I guess I'd like to think that if the situation was reversed, you know, I just don't think we would have gone low like that. And maybe that's, oh, you're a homer. But I would like to think that had the situation been reversed, we would not have.
So. Yeah, and look, I think they could have thrown a flag. I mean, there are personal fouls and unnecessary roughness that happens after a play or after a whistle all of the time. So I don't think it was, I don't think it was outside of the rules for them to have thrown a whistle. I just think they were sort of in the moment of that was, you know, you didn't hear my whistle. So, okay. And they sort of got wrapped up into that. And I did think it was interesting when, you know, the player had an opportunity for, you know, on the Ruggs hit and he was called for targeting. I probably didn't think it was targeting, but it was close enough where I've seen, you know, players, you know, could have been. And I thought, man, you know, the officials were like, damn, if we call this targeting, they will storm the field on us. And so I do wonder if there wasn't a little bit of that. So for all of the breathlessness around, you know, conspiracy theories, I think there's two instances right there where truly that was not the case. Truly, the officials were not trying to prop up Alabama because, you know.
Not at all. Not at all, because that could have been, you know, when an official misses a call and there's a, you know, makeup call, I actually thought that was a great opportunity to make it right and kick him out of the game. And so I think I think the officials were, and this goes back to the head ref, who I was not impressed with, because right after the play with Tua, when Tua tries to come back in the game, it's not the head official who notices that he's come in.
Right.
It's one of the sideline judges who runs in and educates the center official on the rules that he has to sit out of play. And so I don't know if he was just sipping his coffee and had his fuzzy slippers on or what, but I was not impressed with the officiating from those two plays, like led something to be desired from the center ref.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't disagree. I think for the by and large, you know, I was okay with the officiating, but I think there were a couple of things there that were, and you're right. It was funny that it was another official. It wasn't the primary, the head official that caught that. You would think that would be, you know, something that they should have been just right on top of, but they were not. I don't know. That's curious. Well, let's dip a toe into offense. You know, Tom, you know, Tua did look human, but he still led an offense that put up almost 600 yards. He had almost three himself. You know, he did throw a pick, but two touchdowns and he had a nice little gallop for a touchdown. That's one of the things that stood out to me on offense. But what else jumps out to you?
All right, so I'm going to break the rules here.
Okay.
Okay, because you've had segments about people in the past, and so obviously we've talked about how great Tua has been and how well he's played, and we'll get to that in a minute.
Sure.
But first of all, we need the listeners to email us some ideas for what to call this segment, but it is long overdue to have a Quinnen Williams segment. And I'm sorry, I think we got to start here. We can't flip the field.
On defense.
No, we're not. We're going to come back to offense, but he earns the recognition of not even waiting to flip the field. Okay.
Wow. You're going
to. I'm sorry. Dude, I'm sorry. The guy looks to me like he was playing hurt. He'd come out for a play, come back in for a play, come out for a play, come back in for a play. You know, this guy was, I looked him up. He was ranked 106 in the nation coming out of high school. We can thank Bo Davis and Mario Cristobal for him committing on June 30th of 2015. And, you know, this guy comes in at 6'4", 265, homeboy, you know, homegrown boy, Birmingham, Alabama. But we've talked about this kid, okay? And we've talked about this kid for a few weeks, and we've recognized him. But I think the performance that he had in this game was Terrence Cody-like in the Tennessee-Bama game. He didn't block any field goals, but the guy finished with 10 tackles, 7 solos, 2.5 sacks, 3.5 tackles for loss. No offense to any of the other front seven guys, but I think his performance in this game was beyond ridiculous. There were times where he would just go right through the center and the left guard. There were times that he would go through two linemen and then be chipped by a running back and throw him back 2 yards back. And so I had to start there, man. I mean, there, dude gets a big old game ball, okay? Because I think his performance was just off the charts.
Wow, give Tom a week off and he's going to remake the whole deal. Look, I think that's awesome. I think Quinnen, you know, the big Q, I think, you know, the biggest sort of, and this will, you know, I'm going to pull my shoulder congratulating ourselves. I'm so glad we've been talking about him all season, because the last like 2 weeks, that seems to be the trendy story. People asking about Quinnen and his draft stock, and he's moving up the board, and he makes more money with every, you know, play he makes because he's going to be drafted that much higher, and, you know, all of that stuff. And I just say, man, I'm glad we've been talking about Q all season long. And in fact, you know, even the pregame or the preseason show, when we talked about the defense, we were talking about this guy being one of the key contributors stepping in. And so I feel, and as jerky as this may sound, I feel more, you know, with every sort of passing week, I feel more and more vindicated, you know, that this is the guy that's going to step in and contribute. This is the guy that's going to step in and play. And on what has been for the Tide, the biggest stage of the season, he just does more of what he's been doing, which is awesome. I mean, not only did he just do what he's been doing, but he did more of it. You know, and so to your point, he was injured sort of in and out. You know, I my breathing almost started and stopped with, is he leaving the field? Is he coming back on? What's he doing? Should he just not come back on anymore? You know, all of those kinds of things. But then he would come in and make a big play. Yeah, I mean, dude is fun to watch. I'd heard an interview with Jonah saying, and Jonah said something to the effect that, hey, I'm glad that he's doing this to everyone else, because then we don't feel so bad in practice when he does this to us every day. And I thought that was funny. And then, like, the big thing that Danielson kept saying, and I didn't hear this necessarily in an interview, but Danielson kept saying, it's like, you know, blocking Quinn is like trying to block a 300-pound bar of soap. I was like, I get it. You know, that dude's tough to get mitts on and keep him out. And, you know, he certainly demonstrated that on Saturday. You know, 2.5 sacks, 10 tackles. I mean, he was certainly the bell cow on defense. So,
well, and dude, the stats, but dude, the stats, right? For a nose guard.
Yeah.
For a nose guard that was double and triple teamed. Dude, we've talked about great players on the front line at Alabama and how well they've played. Dude, this might be one of the, as far as like catching the eye test in one game. Dude, this might be the top performance I've seen from a front guy with their hands in the dirt, much less the nose guard, for the past decade. No offense to Jonathan Allen and all these guys that came before them, but did any of them have the kind of game that he just had? I don't think so.
Well, you know, yeah, I think that'd be interesting. Jonathan Allen probably somewhere along the way, but your point is valid. I think, you know, what he did, I think, stands alone. And I, you know, I don't want to say that it's better than, you know, A'shaun Robinson's games.
No,
but, you know,
no.
But if you were to go look, what are their best performances than what Quinn did would stack up.
What's so huge about this, Dave, is that you know, when Jonathan Allen and some of these other guys were doing the impact that they did, right? And they're obviously was really good players, right? They're doing it from the edge.
Yes, yes.
This guy is coming up the middle and beating two guys. And so he's like it's the worst possible thing for an offense because he's right there in the backfield, in the center of the backfield between the tackles, time after time after time after time.
Yeah. And yeah, he is. And so he starts to affect the play. You know, you could point last year to Daron Payne having a couple of games or a couple of moments, you know, like that. But when you're in the middle like that, you know, you're literally one step, you know, especially quarterback under center, you're one step away. And that seems to be the big push with even in the NFL is if you can get someone slippery, someone inside that can beat blocks, then, you know, geometrically, they're just that much closer to the quarterback than coming off the edge. And you completely burst the pocket as opposed to, hey, we can roll the pocket or move the pocket or run outside of the pocket. I mean, you've blown it up. You've burst the pocket, you know, half a second into the play. That's a weapon. And I think you mentioned Cody. And I think that on one hand, I get your point, right? It's a disruptive force in the middle. But on the other hand, Cody and Quinn are completely different players and completely different, you know, body types and structures.
Yes.
The way that they are schemed into a defensive front, it really points to, and I don't want to say genius of Saban and all that kind of stuff, but the evolution of defense in college football is, there's your bookends, like literally, you know, from one approach to another, that there's sort of the evolution of a nose guard.
Yes. No, absolutely. I just meant the impact he made in that game, the Alabama-Tennessee game, you know, versus the impact this kid made, you know, in this game. One of the things that jumps out, so please email us, give us your thoughts. We gotta have a headline here for, you know, because I have a feeling that, you know, there might be opportunities to have a segment here in the weeks ahead. You know, I want to say kudos to Jerry Jeudy and Jalen Waddle and their ability to be in the game the entire game. Yep. With Devonta Smith not able to be out there a whole lot from what I saw and Ruggs getting banged up, you know, into the game. You know, these two guys, you know, don't know how they have the endurance they have. One being a true freshman, but these two guys being out there the entire game and with a thin receiving core when we go 3 and 4 wide in our formations, just kudos to them to be out there as much as they were. Derek Keefe had to come in and play some, and then we saw some Terrell Shavers. But, yep. Obviously Jeudy had a great, had a great game and made a lot of good plays, but you know, just kudos to those two guys, right? With already we only run 4 deep in our receivers and 2 of them are not in there really. And just wanted to talk about just kudos to those two guys for stepping up and, you know, playing the way they did.
Yeah. I think, you know, if you look at it, you know, game over game, you know, they must have been like, I've not run so many routes in a game since, you know, high school. And so, you know, that was good that they were able to step up. You know, Henry Ruggs, got dinged up and, you know, reports are that he's going to be okay. X-rays were negative, which is positive. And the irony on Ruggs is when he got hit, he got sort of dinged. It didn't look, you know, went back and watched it and it didn't look like, oh, gruesome, that's where it happened. It just somewhere in the play. And the irony is, and we've talked about this before, it happened when he was blocking. And so that should not be evidence that a receiver shouldn't block, but it just is, again, evidence that these guys are willing to go in there and mix it up and be physical, even though they're not maybe the biggest guys. But they were certainly able to do that. And so glad that he's going to be okay. And certainly glad that, like you said, that they perform so well. Waddle has definitely progressed. I know he's technically still a true freshman, but, you know, the old saying about at this point of the season, no one's a freshman. And so he sort of exemplifies that. And then Jerry Jeudy just, you know, 103 yards, 8 catches. I mean, he's just going to work. He just does what he does. I wish I wish he could have gotten a touchdown, but just the fact that, 103 yards, 8 catches, dude's as good as we've seen.
Well, unfortunately, he would have had a touchdown. Whoever called this, when one of their cornerbacks had to come out for a play, they went after the cornerback covering Judy on that interception, and he was open. And unfortunately, they blitzed off the edge in the slot, and we did not pick it up. And Alex Leatherwood tried to float out and get the guy, but couldn't get the guy quick enough. And so he affected the timing, and Tua had to step up.
Yep.
And then when he threw the ball, the safety had a had chance to come over and help out. But I think had he thrown the ball when he wanted to, it would have been a very easy touchdown between the hashes. Judy had his guy beat by 5 yards.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. He was late throwing the pass for the reasons that you said. And that did give, the safety time to get over. And that's a heads up play by the safety, because how many times do we not see the safety get over for that? And so Tua sort of pirouettes into a platform where he can throw from, and the receiver's, still open. So the fact that Todd Harris was able to get over there, I think he was their leading tackler and the interception. So he was the secondary guy that really sort of, took center stage in my mind. And, that's a hats off play on his part, because how often do we see the safeties not get there or can't get there, or they've bit on, some eye candy up front and they're not able to get there. And so the fact that, Tua threw it down there, was not expecting that the safety, because it's never happened that the safety can get there. And then, in effect, it was a long punt. So as an INT, it didn't hurt us. But you're exactly right. Had he hit that in stride on time, I think that would have been certainly a big play, probably a touchdown.
Well, what's interesting, this just speaks to the talent of LSU, right? Their two leading guys on the stat line was Todd Harris and Patrick Queen, both guys who had to come in for injured players.
Yes.
So that just goes to show you, LSU. Well, hey, it was good to see Damian Harris get the start. Yep. And it was good to see him break that 100-yard barrier for the first time.
It really was. And this was one of those things. And we've kind of talked about, was he being saved up for later in the season? We've talked about big conference games, of which this was one, where Saban sort of shrinks the bench a little bit. And so for Damian to have 19 carries, I think it sort of exemplified that, right? There's a little shrinking of the bench. There was a little, put the ball in the hands of those that we have the highest levels of confidence in. And we have so many of those on offense that it's hard to sort of parse that out. But 19 carries by Damian stands out to me.
No, it does. And so I just was happy for him that, he was able to do that. And I just wanted to touch on, Tua for a second. I think that there is something there with the knee. Obviously, we're not going to know because, we didn't even know Jalen had ankle surgery, right? So just how things are kept to the vest. But, he missed on a throw to Irv Smith at the beginning of the game, which, he's human. But there was a couple times where when he was moving in the pocket due to the speed of the LSU defense, he didn't get to – when you slow-mo it, you see he's not really planting with that right foot the way you would if you were 100% healthy. And so there was just a couple balls, like the ball to Ruggs across the middle that, could have been called pass interference that was thrown behind Ruggs. It was a really, really hard pass to catch. I just think that he was shuffling in the pocket and Pierce-Bakker got pushed into him. And so he has to slide over and he can't really plant with that right foot and get the ball, delivered to Ruggs where he normally does. And so he threw a couple balls behind guys. Ruggs made a phenomenal catch earlier in the game on a throw that was thrown behind him. So there's something with that knee because it's affecting his delivery a little bit, and I think it affected his, his stats in the game.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that, one of the least – biggest surprises or the smallest surprise or no surprise at all, or Stevie Wonder can see it coming kind of things that, you know, that I would put out there is the week after Alabama stops playing, which hopefully is, you know, in January, the week after that game, the headline that you could write now is, you know, Tua has minor surgery on his knee. I just think that's
they'll call it cleanup surgery, right?
We need to
clean up a few things.
And it's not uncommon for that to happen, for players to have that. I think we see that a lot. I don't track it at other programs, but it seems that at the end of every season, you know, there's a couple of guys that have, you know, some cleanup surgery and they're out for a day or questionable for a day or spring practice, that kind of thing. And so, you know, one of the headlines that I would be least surprised to see is that he has some cleanup surgery in mid to late January and is questionable for spring practice. And you know what? I'll say it now. Okay. I don't want to say I don't care, but from a perspective of roster management and players and all of that, then I'm not concerned about it.
No, absolutely. We're okay with him not playing in the spring. It's okay. He's earned that.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, we know what we have now.
No, absolutely. I was trying to think as far as what else, anything else jumps out at you, on offense?
You know, Najee went down, and it looked really, really bad. When he did, he couldn't even, you know, get to the sidelines. And it looked more like a foot than it did, an ankle. And, you know, here's a guy that is a really tough, you know, hard runner. I think he would have gotten 100 yards. He was up to 83, and his average was more than double that of Damien's. I think he would have gotten to 100 yards as well if he had not had to go out. And here's a guy that missed significant time, you know, multiple weeks in fall camp for a foot injury, and a guy that, and we talked about it on the show a couple of weeks ago, you know, was walking out of the stadium in a walking boot. And so I think he probably spends a lot of time in a walking boot between games. And so I think he probably really, you know, sprained or disrupted a pre-existing injury. And, you know, there again, minor foot surgery cleanup in late January for Najee would not surprise me. And so,
probably won't see him in A-Day either.
No, right. And that's fine.
Yeah.
That's okay. Yeah. And so, you know, here's another guy that I think is going to be okay to play as the season goes on, and we'll see him maybe more in limited duty, but that's okay because Damien's as fresh as they come, you know, at this point. And Josh Jacobs and, you know, Brian Robinson is looking for an opportunity to carry the ball. And so I think that we're going to be okay, you know, there in the running game. But good to hear that his injury was,
not season ending. Yeah. Not season ending.
Because exactly.
When he walked off the field, you know, dragging it, I definitely was wondering, okay, is he done?
Yes.
So, and while we could use him at Mississippi State, you know, I'd like to see if they could just get past Mississippi. You know, they have a lot of depth, like you said. So hopefully maybe we don't see him Mississippi State, and then we don't see him Citadel, and maybe we don't see him to Auburn.
Yeah. So, I think if we could get to that with limited carries between now and then, I think that would be great. I think, Tommy, it'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the offensive line. I'll sort of let you unpack that where you necessarily want to go. But if you take an LSU defense as vaunted as they were, I know they're missing their best pass rusher, has been out all season. But I thought the offensive line, I thought they acquitted themselves well against such a name brand defense.
I think so. And, you know, uncharacteristic of Alabama teams in the past, right? For, you know, a quarterback to drop back and attempt 42 passes.
Yes.
And so, you know, we used to talk about if the Alabama quarterback was 20 of 30, it was a good day, right? And so that would be what, 15 attempts in the first and 15 in the second. Well, you know, he attempted 42 passes. And we talked about the fact that this offensive line seemed more comfortable in pass blocking.
Yep.
And so that plays into their strengths, right? And I will say from the running game standpoint, they had a lot of success with, you know, their tight ends, specifically Hale, being able to, you know, being able to, I guess more misdirection, running formations where I don't want to say it was a true trap, but he was kind of the pulling guy from the H formation, from the H tight end, and he would pull into the hole and, or kick out a guy. And, I thought Hale had a really good day, and no offense to the lineman, but he was helpful as well, in when they had success running the ball.
Yeah, I think so. I'm either going to step all over your mini game ball, or I'm going to, you know, call someone out for, you know, for good play. But I thought Deontay Brown, you know, stepping in for Lester Cotton, he did get the start. I was absolutely watching for that. He did get the start. I thought he played very well, and I think he cracked open some holes that the running backs benefited from as well. So I think he looks very good there in a starter position, and I'm not mad at Lester or Lester Cotton. I just think that just means players continue to develop, and it really shows that we have more depth because Cotton could go back in. I think we'd feel comfortable. Matt Womack could go back in. I think we'd feel comfortable. You know, we've seen a sub there at the center, and so I think we're developing depth. I just hit a name block on dude, but I think we're seeing a lot of depth sort of develop and emerge, and that's a hallmark of, you know, every team. You know, it's a cliche, every team gets a little bit better as the season goes on. Yeah, and then some don't, but to see individual players, and even to the extent that they're shuffling of starters on such a, you know, an offensive line cohesive unit, I think it just speaks to the mantra and sort of the process approach that Saban has is, you know, starters are not locked in. We're not, you know, it's not a scoreboard. It's not a day one roster. It's not a day one starting unit. We're going to get better every single day. And then that will be reflected in who plays and who doesn't. And I think that is not at the high level, but at the granular level, that's how Nick Saban teams get better over the course of the season. And I think we're seeing that, I'm in the person of Deontay, but we see it at other positions as well. But coming back to the offensive line, I thought he played well. I thought the line as a whole played well.
I do think they did. And I thought Jedrick Willis, you know, we've mm-hmm. talked about him some in the past few weeks. You know, I think he is improving, and, you know, which is why you don't see Womack out there. Yep. Because he's continuing to improve. And so the other guy you were talking about is, you know, Chris Owens, yes, you know, for Pierschbacher. And, you know, we've seen Scott Lashley, you know, come in at left tackle. And so they are developing some depth here. But overall, in years past, an Alabama team who typically sees their quarterback drop back 25 to 30 times, if a quarterback in years past would have dropped back 42 times against this defense when we were 3 yards in a cloud of dust, there would have been 4 or 5 sacks, right? I mean, we would have been playing into LSU's hands by having to pass the ball that much is what I'm saying. And so to go into this game and to attempt this many passes, and LSU was intent, which I also thought was interesting. They never came with 6. They sometimes came with 5, but a lot of times they would bring 3 guys with their hands in the dirt, and they would bring a corner or a safety off the edge. There was a lot of times that they said, we're going to try to, we think we can get to you with 4. And so I tried to count how many times they brought 5, Dave, and I don't think many times they even brought 5, much less 6, because they were keeping so many guys back to, you know, make the passing lanes harder for Tua.
Yeah, and they did. There were a number of times where they did make it harder. But, you know, he's a tough quarterback to slow down. And it did, I think, you know, give us an opportunity to run the ball. It felt like we were more intentional, you know, running the ball, even with 42 passing attempts. So the balance that we demonstrated, and which kept them off balance, I think was significant, because we still had some quick strike, but we were still, we're going to line it up and run it down your throat. And how do you defend both of those? That's tough to do. And not many teams can do both of them. We're going to line it up and pound you, and we're going to throw it down the field and quick strike you, not necessarily just off play action, but just because we can do that too.
No, absolutely. All right. So, man, what else do you have on offense before we do mini game balls?
No, I like, I like Irv Smith's touchdown catch. That was a well-placed ball. That was a fine catch. But no, let's take us to mini game balls.
All right, so you did steal mine. I was going to give it to Deonte Brown, but you can chime in as well. But
we had a write-in email for Deonte, and I replied back to the guy. I said, well, he's not my pick, but he might be Tommy's, and so I'm glad that you got him. And I'm sorry I jumped all over him because
it's all good, man. No,
it couldn't go unstated. But no, put on another layer.
Well, I will say though, you know, I could have also given it to Hale because granted, Hale's a headliner, but you know. Hale was very significant in several blocks that he made to spring Damian. But no, Deonte Brown, for him to step in and getting the playing time that he's getting, he brought a very physical presence to this game. And you know, they've got a very good defensive front. You know, as you know, their nose tackle, you know, obviously, you know, knows Tua from years back at, you know, you being from Hawaii as well, but transferred from Texas Tech. And, you know, this guy was a hands full inside. And, you know, they always bring a very physical front, and they had their hands full. Obviously, they do three down linemen as their base formation. But Deonte Brown, I thought was – his physicality came out in this game, and it was definitely needed as they were controlling the line of scrimmage.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's amazing with almost each passing week, the world of college football and its intersection with Hawaii. You know, clearly Tua, you talked about Brandon, I'm a butcher his last name, Fioco, you know, from Hawaii as well.
The Ole Miss quarterback.
Yep. The Ole Miss quarterback, but even the Dave Aranda, the defensive coordinator for LSU, coached both Fioco and Tua in a camp when they were like 10-year-olds, and he remembered them both, which speaks to what sort of what their talent level demonstrated at that age, right? And then and then the LSU quarterback, and there's not that we like talking about these guys, but UCF I think has a quarterback from Hawaii as well. And so I just think it's interesting to see all of these overlapping stories of players from Hawaii, and maybe we're only paying attention to them this year because we have, a Hawaiian quarterback. I don't know, but I find that interesting. But
absolutely. Well, who are you going to give your mini game ball to?
So I'm going to do one of those Tommy things where I'm going to go like a name brand player, but there's a little sliver that is the mini game ball. And so I'm going Damian Harris for my mini game ball. And look, he's the starting running back, and he ran for 100 yards and all of those things. He got him, you know, a touchdown. I am not giving him a mini game ball for those things. I am giving Damian Harris a mini game ball for that one play where for an instant he turned into a defensive back. And for all of our praise of Tua and his play, boy, he let a pass fly that was to Damian that was just off the mark. And the linebacker that was covering Damian was just his eyes were lit up like, you know, Christmas. And had he picked off that ball, he probably had a clear runway for a touchdown. You know, certainly out there in the flat, it would have been hard to catch him. And Damian just reached out and flicked that ball away, defending that pass. And it was at a point in the game, first half, a point in the game where that type of quick strike touchdown was exactly the momentum that a team like LSU needed. And so I'm giving him a mini game ball for a play like that that'll be lost to history. You know, when you shut out a team, it feels like they had zero chance to score, and that play will absolutely be lost to history. But that was a critical, I think, play at that point in the game that helped certainly save points and keep a possession alive. So mini game ball for that one play, Damian Harris.
All right, so you blew up the mini game ball rules, of course.
Oh,
so I'm proud. I'm proud. I'm proud of you for that. So you found a way to exploit the rules. So I like
my
that.
Inner, that's my inner Tommy coming out.
I like that, man. All right, so let's flip the field to defense. We've already started a little bit thanks to Quinn and Williams' performance. What else jumped out at you on defense in this game? Because obviously they were facing a quarterback who, you know, it's so interesting. Before the game, they say Tua has thrown 25 touchdowns and no interceptions, and Joe Burrow has thrown 6 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. LSU ended up dropping him back and attempting 35 passes. They also talked about how Gary Danielson wanted him to run, and they tried that a couple times without any success. But what jumps out at you on defense?
You know, I think that I was kind of emailing or texting with our Swedish correspondent, and he was indicating that, you know, this feels like sort of an old school game. Where Saban is sort of, it's the Python effect where he's just sucking the life and sucking the air out of the opponent, you know, where the defense is carrying the game. And I think there's a lot to that. I think that, we held them to 12 rushing yards on the game, negative rushing yards in the first half, you know, 196 total yards. They had the ball for 24 minutes total. Their time of possession in the first half was just minuscule, and we were just completely just wearing them out. I think the defense, and I have sort of a counterpoint to this as well, but I think the defense really had a chance to show itself in a way that other games this season they haven't. They've been sort of the secondary story to Tua and an offense that puts up 50. Here's a defense leading a shutout against the number 3 team. I think they got some of the headlines that maybe they have been wanting.
Oh, absolutely. And like you talked about, though, we were able to get pressure on them, in part because of how, we talked about Quinnen Williams and what he can do in the middle of the pocket, which is, has to be just a nightmare for offenses. How many years now have we been able to say, even with the great running backs of the Derek Geises and the Leonard Fournettes of the world, here we are interchanging all these players, leaving after their junior year. And so once again, the LSU comes in wanting to run the ball and they're just not able to do it. And that's why 5 of these shutouts in the past 22 years, 5 of the 6 have come at the hands of Alabama, because, you weren't able yet again to run the ball. And I just think it's so interesting how years after years, they have some really good tailbacks, and we are just able to control the line of scrimmage. And Saban brings in defensive coordinator after defensive coordinator, and new staff and new players, etc. But it's the same old play. We're watching the same play on unfold in front of us, man.
Right. Let me ask you this. I'm gonna take a little counterpoint, right? And so, I just praise the defense, and I don't take away from that. But let's look at this for what it is, right? This was LSU with a terrible, terrible offensive game plan. Tommy, you talked about them wanting to establish the run. I don't think they wanted to establish the run. They had 25 rush attempts on the game. 12 of those were Joe Burrow, which most of that was him scrambling to save his life. 5 of those were sacks. And so of their 25 rushes, not all of them were authentic, power run the ball running back type rushes. Their lead running back, Brossette, had very, very few carries on the game. Instead, their game plan was to line up and throw the ball 35 times. And again, that's the pass attempts they had. The sacks were pass attempts as well. They just don't count there. And so they completed, and guess what? Joe Burrow is Joe Burrow. He was 51% passing on the day. Okay, Tom, here's who Joe Burrow is. On the season, he's averaging 53.5%. On home games, 54.7%. Away, 50%. In September, he was averaging 53.4. In October, 54.3. In the first half of games, 55.6. In the second half of games, 50.5. Within conference, 54. Non-conference, 51. First down, 56. Second down, 53. Third down, 48. And on fourth down, 66%. And so it's almost like they looked at it and said, we're just going to play like it's fourth down all day. Tom, is that not the dumbest game plan you've ever heard of? Is our defense, is the Alabama defense really, really that good? Or was the LSU game plan stupid dumb?
Oh, I think the game, you know, the game plan was dumb as because of who their quarterback is. He did make a couple nice throws. Obviously their best receiver, Justin Jefferson, you know, had six catches for 81 yards. And so, you know, he had a good day, and connected on a couple nice passes. And so interestingly enough, of their three receive, you know, their leading receiver had six and their next two guys only had two catches each. And so LSU teams of old would have ran the ball, would have shortened the game, right? And would have tried to keep it close. And LSU teams of old had game managers like Burrow. And, you know, it's been discussed that Burrow was under 60% completion so far this season. It's been discussed by many people that, you know, he's just not the guy to get it done. Right. Gary Danielson even said at the end of the game, he said, or at some point at the end of the game, he said, you know, Ed Orgeron probably just knows that he just doesn't have the horses. However, he said it, I'm paraphrasing, to, you know, to hold up with Alabama. So it makes you wonder if because of how proficient the offense has been and because of how many points they score and because, you know, the margin of victory at half, the margin at halftime is, you know, after the first quarter is 21-4. It makes you wonder if LSU got brought out of their game plan because of how successful the offense has been. It makes me wonder if they said, we've got to get in a shootout to have a chance here, even though we don't have the weapons and the quarterback to do a shootout, we have to try.
That's fair, but I think as the game unfolds, you have the opportunity to evolve that. And look, going into half with 2 minutes, look at this, 2 minutes and 55 seconds left, LSU had the ball. So 2:55 left in half. On first down, they run the ball. Second down takes place at 2 minutes and 15 seconds. So they burn 40 seconds off the clock. On second down, they drop back five steps, take a sack at the 1 foot line, and third down happens at 2 minutes. So the sack, the loss of yards, the near safety took 15 seconds off the clock, whereas the run took 40 seconds off the clock. On third down, they run. Alabama calls timeout. We get, and so LSU punts with a minute 54 on the clock. So they burned 40 seconds on first down, a run. They burned 21 seconds the other three downs. Alabama takes over, scores in 27 seconds to get it to 16. And so it's nine. And so you are literally at halftime. You are at the doorstep of halftime. It's a 9-point game. If you're LSU and you are honest to your heart, you say, this is more than we ever could have dreamt of. Let's keep it at 9, go to half, regroup. And all they would have had to do is just run the ball a couple more times. They got cute. They got fancy. They stuck with what they thought was this contrived game plan that they knew they couldn't execute. But everything went their way. And then it's almost like they pissed it away right there at half. And when it got to 16, I was like, this thing's over. At 9, I don't know that they get to 9, but at 16, there's no way. It's done. They went into half having nailed their own coffin by that play series right there, convinced of it.
Oh, and you know, and their best player, right, that we talked about, right? It, you know, Devin White is just, you know, chomping at the bit to come in. And so him coming into a game 9-0 is very different than him coming into a game 16-0. Yeah,
absolutely. That should have been part of the plan. Is and look, and
Gary Danielson said as much several times.
Right. And what's the old saying? You know, everybody's got a, you know, Mike Tyson, everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the mouth. Okay. That's cute. Right. Everyone's got a plan until circumstances change. And that doesn't always mean getting punched in the mouth. Maybe the circumstances changed significantly in your favor. And so now, hey, now we can do something a little different because we have the opportunity to take this to half at 9 points. And we like our kicker and we like our game plan. And we, this gives us the opportunity to go back to really who we are. We can go into this game fresh start. I mean, think about if you're the coach and you're able to give that message at halftime versus, oh, we just stepped on our dicks here and gave them a touchdown that they never should have touched the ball.
Well, and to your point, right? They deferred and gave the ball to Alabama to start the half, to start the game. And Gary Danielson was like, you know, yeah, I'm surprised they did this. They gave Alabama an extra possession. So to your point, okay, because they're a team whose quarterback had played in 8 games and only thrown 6 touchdown passes, they could have gone into halftime 9-0 and said, okay, now we're going to come out in the second half and we're going to run the ball and we're going to try to make this a 9-7 ball game.
Right. You could say that we've weathered that, right? Not only did we weather not having Devin White, but we gave them an extra possession because we wanted to put, you know, and you dress that up however you want to. We wanted to put our best unit on the field first, right? And then we wanted the opportunity to come out at half with our adjustments and all of that. And so you could say that we've weathered all of this and it's a non-score game. And I know that's a 2-score game, but you know, it's a touchdown, a field goal, and that's doable. And you have life. You have life if you come out at half, because that's better in their heart of hearts. That's better than they ever could have expected. But when that touchdown happened, and it happened in 2 plays, 2 chunk plays, Alabama scored and, you know, made it a 16, which, you know, you could call it 2 scores because, you know, the extra points. But in reality, you know, that's borderline a, you know, 2.5-score game, right? And I just take you almost just the exhale, like, that's what happened. And that's what we were afraid of happening, is them scoring in chunks, and it just happened. And how many times, you know, what coaches say, it's those last minutes before a half and the first minutes coming out of a half that dictate the outcome of the game. There you have it.
Oh, absolutely, man. And I'm glad we were on the good end of that stick.
Oh, absolutely. Because how many times have we not been? How many times have we seen a 14-point shift, right? Where we trip the ball away and let the opponent score going into half, and then they get the possession coming out of half. I mean, we've let, you know, Western Kentucky do that to us, right? I mean, go back and look at the list of teams over the years that we've let get back-to-back scores, you know, couple of field goals or a field goal and a touchdown, or worst case 2 touchdowns. I mean, we've seen it. We've talked about it on this podcast. And so to be, you know, always want to be on the good end of that. And, you know, here we were. But yeah, LSU had an opportunity to make that something. And
well,
and just run out the clock.
Well, I will say very quickly, just as you like to say, to put a bow on this, they didn't learn it in the locker room either. Because they could have come in the locker room and said, okay, we wish this wouldn't have happened, and it's now 16-0, but the game is still not over, right? We get the ball first, and let's pep up the team, and we get a score here, and it's 16-7.
But how much of that – no, you could have, but doesn't that ring hollow? Doesn't that ring hollow after what it could have been?
Oh, sure, but when they came out of half, first down, they run the ball to the 28. 2nd and 7, right? LSU teams of old on 2nd of 7 can still, you know, can still run the ball, right?
Yep.
He gets sacked by Quinnen Williams for a loss of 7, and now it's 3rd and 14, and you get Alabama in their matchup zone, and you're not going to get many 3rd and 14s. So now 3 plays and you punt. So my point is even coming out of half, okay, they still were intent on having this, you know, guy who lacks the mobility that he needs to have and is a game manager, you know, drop back and try to, you know, do what he can do passing the ball. they came out of the second half the same way they went into the half is what I'm saying.
Yeah. So. Yeah. No, that's fair. That's fair. Give me, what else on defense, or you want to go mini game ball?
You know, I'm just going to say that some of, I guess I would be remiss real quick if I don't talk about just how well Anthony Jennings played, you know, and his pressure on the quarterback. You know, I want to talk about Christian Miller and his impact on the quarterback. You know, the segment of time where they got three offsides in a row, and I think two of them were on Christian Miller.
Yep.
You know, kudos to Saban for letting him go back out there fairly quickly.
Yeah,
because I thought he might be on ice for a little while. And then just Mac Wilson's interception. You know, we've talked about in his career of his ability, you know, to be that nickel linebacker, and I was just so thrilled that he got that pick, and he went up and you know, just put his body out there, because he landed pretty hard. Yep. And, you know, LSU before that had gone for a field goal down by 22. And I think it was because they just didn't want to be shut out at home. And so when Mac Wilson, you know, read that play in the hat between the hashes and was, you know, in zone coverage and dropped back and read the quarterback and made that acrobatic interception for a big guy like that, that was just an awesome play.
Yeah, that was an incredible play, because you know that at that point, you know, you're playing for style points, right? If they get that touchdown there, then, you know, whoop-de-doo, it's 29-7, right? It doesn't impact the outcome of the game. Alabama's won that game, but man, that zero looks a whole lot better, you know, than a seven would have. And so, and the team knew that too, right? You saw how excited they were when he made that play, and then just how deflating it was. You know, it just seems like at that point it was just the ball rolling downhill for LSU. And so they just about, you know, trying to move the ball and do something, and then that happens. And so just so darn deflating. And there's only so many times, just this human psyche, right? There's only so many times that you can, you know, pump up with anticipation, and then have it go the other way. And so I think the start of the game, you know, they were pumped up. I go back to half. I think that was very deflating. And then, you know, there's an opportunity, the field goal, they miss that. And after all sort of the heap and praise of, you know, we like our kicker better than, you know, your kickers. And we'll talk about that, but you know, that was deflating. And then this was just like, are we even that good? You know, it's almost, you can almost feel that's what they were saying. And then you certainly saw their fans, you know, exit the stadium at that point.
Absolutely. Well, give me your mini game ball so you won't take mine.
Well, I should just throw out a whole bunch of list of names here, hoping I trample all over your mini game balls, because I'd circle two guys.
And you're not going to get mine, though. It's safe. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I circled two guys, and they were Anthony Jennings and Christian Miller, and you couldn't just take one of them. You had to take both of them. But I liked they did what, and they didn't have big numbers. Three tackles. You know, Jennings had a sack. Christian had a sack. Christian only had a sack. You know, one tackle. But their pressure, and both of them, you know, almost like a beehive. You know, rushing off the edge and just being a nuisance, right? And affecting the quarterback in sort of the parlance of Saban. And they were doing what we envisioned them being able to do, right? We've seen them make plays, we've seen them, but we've not seen them consistently be a nuisance to the offense. It to me, it feels like they were Saturday night. And that was just fun to see them sort of be who they're intended to be. And I just enjoyed that. So I give them mini game balls for that.
Okay. No, that is fair, man. They definitely affected the quarterback, right? Which we talk about, you know, so much. Well, I'm going to give mine to your boy Shame Carter.
Okay.
Just him stepping up when LSU was running on the edge, when they did decide to run the ball, and him stepping up and basically holding the edge and making the play in the backfield. And, you know, Trevon Diggs is a really good player, and, you know, he's, you know, apparently gone for the year. And so we talk about next man up, and Carter had to be that guy. And, you know, just like we've talked about with some of these other players and they're not being a drop off, like a Jalen Waddle. Well, kudos to Carter, right? Because we talked about other DBs who have shied away from competition and have transferred to, you know, away from Alabama and gone somewhere else because the grass is greener somewhere else. And, you know, this guy has waited for his time, and he has, you know, is a true junior and is getting his chance to play. And the star is his position right now. And he's got quality. He's got guys behind him that would like his snaps. And sure. just kudos to him that right now, teams have not found that to be something they can exploit. I'll say it that way.
Yeah. He's one of those guys, and maybe it's a function of his position. You know, I don't know. This is common, I guess, of offensive linemen, but it seems like he has one of those rare characteristics in his play that the less you hear about him, probably the better he's playing. And
No, that's fair.
I think that's an interesting sort of quality, but I get that. That's my sense of him. And look, I've had confidence in him from the beginning that he was going to be one of the guys that was going to man a position. And when we talk about secondary, we lost six guys and we're looking to replace, you know, six guys because we play a lot of nickel and dime. And so Shy was one of those guys that I knew he was going to be in there, probably in the top four. So he's a full-time guy. And he could have played a couple of different positions and has. And so one of the guys that I think we've had confidence in from the beginning and playing with a lot of confidence, a lot of comfort, with a lot of ease back there in the secondary. And yeah, I think that's a hats off call. I think we've got to say the names, Savion Smith and Dylan Moses, both have roots in Baton Rouge. Both had six tackles. Both were active. Both were overly excited, but they were maximum excited level for the opportunity to play and win that game in Baton Rouge. And so I didn't know if you were going to go with those guys, but I think they at least deserve some shout out for that.
No, absolutely. Well, man, let's go to special teams real quick. LSU did a good job of not giving Jalen Waddle the opportunity to do anything.
Yep.
They did a good job. You know, Alabama had no kick returns as well. You know, very frustrating on the two missed extra points, and between that and the punting, it allows the media to, you know, to the Gary Danielsons of the world to say, hey, if they get in a tight game, special teams is going to be an issue.
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, I think that there were no, you know, Waddle didn't have a big day in a return game. And I'm going to tell you, that's probably the least surprise that I've got going, right? If you take a loaded team, a very talented team, that is motivated to play like an LSU, then you're going to see a lot of fellas on special teams that are going to contribute, that are going to make plays, that are going to, you know, do what they need to do. And that's exactly what they did in their coverage units. They were on time, they were on point, and they didn't allow any yards. And that you know, that's probably the least surprising thing that happened. But I'll say this, and this is a metric that speaks to how poorly our special teams played, that Waddle fielded the ball cleanly, nearly every time and helped retain possession of the ball. And it's unfortunate that that's probably the highlight of our special teams.
Well, absolutely, man. And, you know, on the first missed extra point, you know, Mac Jones just didn't handle it. Right. And then to, you know, to come out of this game with two out of four missed extra points is definitely frustrating. And I'm sure that, you know, that will continue to give Saban a source of pointing out to, you know, this team's not perfect and we have things that we still need to work on.
Yeah. Do you feel better or worse that one was just a really bad kick and then one was a really bad, you know, hold? I mean, do you feel better that, oh, at least I can explain it? Or do you feel worse that it's like, damn it, it's so many things?
The hold is, you know, hold's going to happen, right? And Mac Jones, you know, redshirt freshman, you know, you're things are just going to happen. Yeah. That one you can explain away if it happens one time every now and then, but the other one you just have to roll your eyes. You can't explain that one.
Yeah. What about Mike Bernier and his punting?
You know, I think he didn't hit the 40-yard average that we need him to do. Four punts for 32.8 average is, you know, and I didn't get a chance to go back and look at, you know, exactly, you know, obviously no touchbacks, none inside the 20. You know, on the surface, the 32.8, you know, definitely the week before, you know, definitely 2 weeks ago was a better game for him.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I know at least one of his kicks was sort of semi situational in which you're trying to pin him in, and he wasn't able to pin him in. And that's going to happen about as many times as it doesn't happen that you're able to pin him in, unless you're, you know, J.K. Scott level of punter. And so that's going to lower the average, but you know, he didn't pin him in, and his long was only 36. So, you know, it's almost like Burrow is going to be a 52% passer, and that's all he's ever going to be, because that's all he ever is in any setting or venue or time frame or snap count. You know, that it is what it is. And so, you know, the long of 36, I was just hoping that, you know, if he had a 32 average, pinned him inside the five once, and then had a 45, a long of 45, then you could say, hey, he's sort of running the gamut here. But man, that long of 36, I know his long, you know, I know he hit two right at 40. I just wonder if that, I don't know. Maybe I just don't know enough, but is 40 sort of his amped up max? Did we see more of what we're going to get? I don't know. Probably more questions than answers there, but I think it's telling that Saban, when asked about his kickers, if he were asked about linebackers, you know, and I'm not mad at linebackers, but, you know, if he were asked about another position, you could see him sort of get a streak of fire talking about it. You know, we've got to coach him up. We've got to do better. It's effort. It's this. It's that. And you could see an edge to it. But when he talks about kickers, it's almost like, you know, Mr. Rogers, you know, he has a very soft gloves. Well, they kick it so well in practice, and they just needs to get over the hump, and you know, it's going to take a little more time, but we really like our guys, and we've really got a lot of confidence into them. And it's almost like he's playing, it's more of a mental thing than it is a physical effort thing. And it'd be the dichotomy of how he talks about one versus how he talks about the other. You know, because he doesn't want to sort of blister him and wear him out and sort of burn him. I find that curious. I find that interesting. They're just not performing.
Well, here's what I'll tell you real quick. I had not had a chance to break it out, but his first punt was at the line of scrimmage was the LSU 34, and it was a touchback. So I'm sorry, I misspoke there. His last punt was from the LSU 40. And he punts it 29 yards, and they fair catch it at the 11. So that was okay, right? So that one he was trying to, if you can pin him inside the 10 and he did the 11, that's okay. The first time it went to the first time it was a touchback. I think what jumps out at you, though, is the other two punts. One time he punts from the Alabama 43-yard line. Well, here we go. The second punt, it was fourth and eight at the 50, and he only punts at 32 yards, and they fair catch it at the 18. Yep. So if the line of scrimmage is a 50, you need to try to do a little bit, you know, better than 18 there. And then the other punt, this one here, I think is the telling one. His 36 yarder, the line of scrimmage was the Alabama 43. And so his last punt of the day is from the Alabama 43. He punts at 36 yards, and they fair catch at the 21.
Yeah.
So those to me are the telling ones. One was from the 43, one was from the 50. And, you know, now they were not returnable. I will say this, right? None of them were returnable. And so the fact that from the 43 and from the 50 were fair catched at the 21 and the 18, at least there was no return yardage. So once again, right, that's better than the alternative, right, of a 12-yard punt and a 12-yard return. So I'll just say right now that overall, you know, dissecting this a little bit more, you know, is there room for improvement? Yes. But essentially you had a touchback. LSU started at the 11 and the 18 and the 21. So looking at that way, Dave, I think it's okay.
So the silver lining being there was no chance that he was going to overkick his coverage.
Correct. And they didn't return the ball, right? So that's a positive. So, all right. So let's talk.
We find them where we can, right?
No, absolutely. So I know we wanted to talk about, you know, the week ahead. So kind of give me your thoughts on Mississippi State.
You know, Mississippi State, I'm glad we get them at home. I'm glad that our next three games are at home. You know, give the players an opportunity to get off their feet Friday afternoon instead of, you know, shuffling through travel. I think that's great. I think Mississippi State is a team that always plays physical. It's sort of always for them. It's always a big game. I know that sometimes we look past Mississippi State, but I think it's always a physical. It's always a hard fought game. The fact that we play them at right after LSU, I think, you know, that always sort of contributes and is a factor. I really like Mississippi State's defensive front. That might be about all I like about Mississippi State. I find that they are, you know, they're 6-3 on the year. I sort of christen them as LSU light. You know, Joe Burrow is the statistically the next to last quarterback in the league. Nick Fitzgerald is the worst statistically quarterback. I won't run through all the numbers like I did with Burrow, but whereas Burrow's had, you know, everything 50s, Fitz has a lot of 40s. And so I think it's going to be kind of like the LSU game where at no point are they really a threat to outscore us in terms of them scoring quick points. A pick six is about the threat that we'll get. And it's just a function of how will their defense stand up against the Alabama offense and what sort of point total do we look for? I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a 36-3, maybe a 42-7 kind of game. That's what I look for out of Mississippi State.
Well, what's interesting, man, if we just wanted to look at the numbers, you know, both teams have played the Raging Cajuns. And Alabama's final score was 56-14, and Mississippi State beat them 56-10. So that's supposed to mean this is an even game, right? I mean, both teams are equally as good, right?
Exactly what that means.
but then what I think is very telling is they lost to LSU 19-3, right? And we just talked about LSU's offense, right? So they lost 19-3, and LSU was able to hold them at home to 3 points. But what I think is very interesting to me is if you look at the fact that both of these teams played, you know, a good Texas A&M team, right? Mm-hmm. Texas A&M gave us a challenge, right? Well, Mississippi State playing Texas A&M, you know, they lost 28-13. And so Texas A&M was able to put 28 up on them and they put 23 on us. The difference is to your point about their quarterback and their offense, they only were able to score 13 against Texas A&M and we scored 45. So that to me is it in a nutshell, right? Those two games, the two like opponents of Texas A&M and LSU makes this very telling. And so, you know, I think this is probably going to be, you know, I'm going to say this is going to be a 42-7 game.
Okay. Okay. We both put that number out in, put that number out there. And I think that's about right. I think that and if we score most of those in the second half, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if it's, well, I was going to say most, I wouldn't be surprised if it's 21-7 at half. So I guess that would be half or, I mean, I'd probably be surprised at 14-7, but 21-7, I wouldn't. And then, you know, we roll out in the second half and put up another 21. I wouldn't be surprised at that at all.
Well, this should be a game that we should try to get Damian Harris, you know, back on track and then let Josh Jacobs and Brian Robinson come in and take care of business.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's fair. All right.
Well, I know you had a couple things from some listeners that you wanted to touch on.
Yeah, let's spend a minute doing that. We've gotten some reviews, some 5-star reviews on the iTunes, and again, we really, really appreciate the kind words. Some of these are just really flattering. And certainly these helps us rank well, and it helps other people find us. So we really, really appreciate them. I'm going to hit this one really quick. I don't know if I covered this one last time or not, but this is Bo the Third. He's saying by far the best Alabama football podcast available. These guys do a great job, very insightful. They go into every detail on aspects of the game. And he was asking for a recap of the national championship game. But Bo, we really appreciate your kind words. We've got some of these names. This is myself 009147. I have no idea, very flattering. They give a Roll Tide, a 5-star, and there is not a better breakdown of sports in the world. Which that is that's
we appreciate the comment. Well, absolutely.
I am going to mispronounce this one. It's AZALMDFL. So, I'm not going to try to pronounce it, but,
okay.
But this is by far the best podcast on Alabama football, hands down. I enjoy the weekly game analysis provided by Tom and Dave over the past 2 years since discovering them. It's been 6 months since the national title game, and I checked the feed hoping for a show. I understand you guys are busy, and this is a side project. Hoping you guys will be back for next season. So hopefully this person, we appreciate the 5-star that came in back over the summer. We appreciate the 5-star review. We appreciate the kind words there. And we did a little bit of something pregame, preseason this time, and mentioned that one, but we really appreciate it. This is Mike Almo giving us a 5-star. Roll Tide. Just found this podcast recently. Great insight on players and Bama program. Good stuff. So that's awesome, Tom. We got people that are just now finding us and enjoying it. And then we got people that have been listening a while. So that's awesome.
Absolutely, guys. We appreciate you listening. Please email us your thoughts. If there's something you want us to talk about on the show, just please let us know, and we're happy to cover it.
Absolutely. We got a couple more, but we'll pick those up in a future show. Go out there, leave us a 5-star review, and a candid review. Leave us a candid review, and we'll get you on the air as well. So we really appreciate it. But as Tom said, we really appreciate it. Drop us emails, drop us questions, reach out to us. We're so happy to engage with the Tide faithful out there that are listening along. Tom, this has been another big week. You know, all the joke is we still haven't played anyone yet, and I'm cool with that. And look forward to a strong finish to the rest of the season. I think it's material that we play these games at home. It's not like having a bye week, but it does reduce the wear and tear. It does reduce the effort, sort of the mental slog of having to travel. We got the Citadel in there. That'll in some regards feel like a week off. So I think the second, this little segment here of the season is really going to set up well for us. The team needs to focus down. I think we are our own biggest opponent. And I like the track that we're on. What do you think?
Absolutely, man. This is Alabama's punched their ticket, and Georgia's punched their ticket for December 1st. And so this gives us something to keep focused and keep working towards.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, hey, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach? Of course. Roll Tide.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% Lean Ground Sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.